The previous couple of Mishnayos discuss the brachos of Malchus, Zichronus, and Shofros, which discuss Hashem's kingship, and that which Hashem remembers, and the Shofar, all psukim to do with those. And this Mishnah continues the discussion of the davening on Rosh Hashanah. Now, ideally, mitzvahs which should be performed on a particular day, if there's a particular time limit on a mitzvah, it should be performed as early as possible. There's a rules, reason makdimila mitzvahs, the one should perform mitzvahs as early and as soon as possible. That shows a particular excitement for the mitzvah. And therefore one would have thought that the shofar and the malchus, achronos, and shofros, that should all be mentioned in the shachris davening, and we shouldn't wait all the way until musaf to do so. However, says the Mishnah, one who davens as the chazan in front of the Oron HaKodesh, he leads the davening on the Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah. Hasheni, the second one to lead the davening that day, meaning the one who leads musaf, not shachris, during the musaf davening, maskia, they blow the shofar. And we're going to understand that the psukim of Malchus, Achronos, and Shofros are also said at musaf, because as we saw, the shofar is blown at the end of each of these three sections. And the reason why we wait until musaf is because there is a dangerous time in the history of the Jewish people when we weren't necessarily allowed to keep mitzvahs, and the enemy would know on Rosh Hashanah that we have lots of mitzvahs to keep. So they would see everyone going into the shul, and they would listen out for the shofar, and they would use that as an excuse. It would might have sounded like a call for war, and they would cause trouble for the Jews. And because of that, we started to blow the shofar only in musaf, once the enemy had been listening in and didn't hear anything throughout the whole of shachris. So by the time it reaches musaf, they would have left already, and that's when we would be able to blow the shofar. Now, on Rosh Hashanah itself, Halal is not recited, although it's considered to be a Yom Tov. Since it's also a day of judgment, it is not appropriate to start singing Halal and songs of joy and praise on the day that somebody is judged. We have to show that we really believe that we are being judged that day. But the Mishnah goes a bit sidetracked and discusses a Yom Tov where one does say Halal, or V'shasa Halal. And at the time that one does say Halal, Horishon Makres HaHalal, the Chazan for the first prayer of that day, Shachris, he would continue to daven Halal for everybody, and the custom in those days was that one person would say Halal, and everybody would listen and fulfill their obligation by hearing the Halal from the Chazan. Perhaps they would answer Halleluka at the end of each phrase, but the main part of Halal would be said by the chazan only. And here, the reason for delaying the shofar does not apply over here, and therefore it is said at the earliest opportunity, which is at the end of the shacharis prayer.
Mishnah Ches, there is a general rule of asei deicheleisa aseh, that a positive mitzvah to do something overrides a negative mitzvah. So if the Torah says you need to do something, and the only way you could do it is by violating a different avera, the rule is that you can violate that avera in order to perform the mitzvah. Now, if the only way to blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah is by violating Yom Tov, in that case it will be forbidden to blow the shofar, since violating Yom Tov is not only a leisa aseh, it's not only an avera, but you're also violating an aseh, a positive mitzvah of resting on Yom Tov. So the positive mitzvah of hearing the shofar does not override both the positive and negative mitzvahs of keeping Yom Tov. The point of this mission is to show us that even if the prohibition of Yom Tov is only midrabbanan, so now you've got the positive mitzvah midoraisa of blowing the shofar, and a negative mitzvah midrabbanan, so we would have thought that certainly you should blow the shofar. Nevertheless, this Mishnah will teach us that the Rabbanon were especially strict with regards to prohibitions of Shabbos and Yom Tov, such that they are viewed as being on the level of a midoraisa prohibition, as if you are violating Yom Tov midoraisa, and as such, you'll be forbidden to do so even in order to hear the shofar. And so the Mishnah says, Shofar of Rosh Hashanah, the shofar of Rosh Hashanah, ima'avirin alav es ha-tchum, it is forbidden to travel beyond the Tchum Shabbos, which is the maximum distance of 2,000 amas from one city, beyond which it is forbidden midrabbanon to travel on Shabbos or Yom Tov. So if the only shofar available is beyond his Tchum, even though it's only forbidden midrabbanon to travel there, one may nevertheless not travel there, even if he will not be able to fulfill the mitzvah. Ve'mefakren olav es hagal, it's forbidden to uncover a pile of stones of rubble, which is on top of a shofar, even if it's the only way you'll be able to hear a shofar. It would mean violating the prohibition midrabbanon of muktzah, of moving things which are not designated for Shabbos use. So the rubble is not designated for any use on Shabbos, and therefore it's forbidden to move it. Midrabbanon, v'lo olim ba'ilon, and one cannot climb a tree in order to get the shofar. That's forbidden midrabbanon in case you come to break off a branch. V'lo rich magal behema, one cannot ride an animal
in order to obtain a shofar. If, let's say, he can't walk, it's forbidden to ride an animal on Shabbos or Yom Tov, in case one comes to break off a stick from a tree in order to use it to guide or hit the animal. It's forbidden to swim in the water in order to perhaps cross a river in order to get a shofar. Drabonon, it's forbidden to swim on Yom Tov in case one comes to build a raft. And it's forbidden to cut the actual shofar off the animal, to cut the horn off, being bedovashu mishum shavus. Whether you use a tool, which would mean it's only forbidden midrabanan, and that would be a tool which is not regularly used to cut horns off an animal, so therefore it would only be forbidden midrabanan. Even in that case, you would not be able to cut the horn off, being bedovashu mishum leisase. And of course, if it requires violating a midoraisa prohibition, then all the more so would be forbidden to cut the horns off the animal. Now, the same would apply if you already cut the horns off the animal, but it still requires a bit more cutting in order to use it as a shofar. That would also be forbidden midoraisa, or midrabanan if you do it in an irregular way, because it's considered to be repairing a utensil, or even creating a utensil, creating a new use for it. However, if, let's say, the shofar could be used, and you are able to produce a sound with the shofar, however, it's not so clear, and you want to clear it out with some liquid. Says the Mishnah, Aval imrod salitin esoichem mayim ayayin, if one wants to put some water or wine through the shofar, yitain, he may do so, he can put it in there, since he would be able to use the shofar without adding that water or wine. So the water or wine is not considered to be repairing the utensil, repairing the shofar. It's making it a better quality sound and easier to use. However, since you could use it without doing so, it is permitted to do so, as it does not come under the category of repairing a utensil. Now, the halacha is, as we learned earlier on in the Masechta, if Rosh Hashanah falls on a Shabbos, then with Rabbanon it's forbidden to blow the shofar, in case one comes to carry it out into a public domain, which would be forbidden with the Oraisa. However, even when Rosh Hashanah falls on a Shabbos, in Ma'akvin is a Tinoikis Meliskaya. One does not need to stop children from blowing the shofar and practicing blowing the shofar and playing with it. And not only that, Avam is asking in Mohen at Yilmadu. One can even busy himself with the children and play with them until they learn how to blow the shofar themselves. That doesn't necessarily mean that the adults are allowed to blow the shofar themselves, but it means that they can sort of show their children how to do it and to totally allow the children to continue playing with the shofar, and we are not concerned that that will lead somebody to carry it out into a public domain. That's only a concern if you have a mitzvah to blow the shofar. So you might take the shofar to an expert or somebody to blow the shofar for you. But here where you have no mitzvah, you're only allowing the children to play with the shofar, we are not concerned that you will come to carry it out into a public domain. Now, while we're on the topic, says the Mishnah of Ahamis Asik, one who is busying himself with blowing the shofar, but he is not doing so in order to fulfill the obligation. Perhaps he's practicing, perhaps he's just playing around, making sounds with the shofar, lo yotza. He has not fulfilled his obligation of hearing the shofar, even if he does this on Rosh Hashanah. And similarly, the Hashemiah Misasek, one who hears the shofar sound from somebody who is blowing it just to busy himself with it, but not with the intention to fulfill the mitzvah, lo yotza, he has also not fulfilled his obligation. The reason being, mitzvah tzriches kavana. In order to fulfill a mitzvah, one has to intend to do so. And the Mishnah is adding that if the person who is doing the act of the mitzvah, the person who is blowing the shofar, if he doesn't have the intention of fulfilling the mitzvah, or of blowing it for other people to fulfill the mitzvah, then even if the person who hears it has the intention, that is not enough. Rather, both of them need to have the intention that the shofar is being blown for the sake of fulfilling the mitzvah. Mishnah Tes, Rosh Hashanah is known as Yom Teruah in the Torah. Yom Teruah means the day of blowing of the Teruah, and the Torah uses this phrase of Teruah 3 times, and we learn from there that a Teruah sound needs to be blown 3 times on Rosh Hashanah. That is the mitzvah midoraisa of Shofar. Now, it is also learned from Pesukim that before each of these Teruah sounds, a Tekiah also needs to be sounded. A Tekiah is 1 long blast, so before and after each Teruah, a Tekiah needs to be blown. Now, what exactly a Teruah is and how the sound is will be elaborated upon in this Mishnah. But first, the Mishnah tells us that Seder Tekiah, the order of the blowings of the Shofar and Rosh Hashanah, is Sholesh, 3 times, 3 sets, Shel Sholesh Sholesh, of 3 blasts each. So that means that you've got to have 3 Teruahs, and each Teruah also has a Tekiah before and after it. So you end up blowing 9 times,
And that's tekiya teruah tekiya 3 times. Shir tekiya, the amount, the measurement of a tekiya, the one longer blow, is kesholesh teruahs. It's like 3 teruahs, and the way we're going to understand this is that it really means that the length which all of the tekiyahs put together, all 6 blasts of a tekiya, the length of 6 tekiya blasts is like the 3 teruah blasts, which means that each tekiya lasts for half of the time that a teruah lasts for. Others learn that it lasts for the same time, and the Mishnah is saying that 3 tekiyahs are like 3 teruahs. But we'll understand for now that a tekiyah is half the length of a teruah. Now, what is a teruah? Says the Mishnah, shir teruah. The measurement of the teruah blast is kesholesh yabavos, which literally means like 3 whimpers, just like when somebody is whimpering and crying. It's often very short sounds, but a few of them one after the other. So a teruah is like 3 whimpers one after the other. Now, the simple understanding of the Mishnah is that a teruah is made up of 3 shorter blasts. And that's what we nowadays know as a shavarim, where the shofar is blown 3 times. However, others understand that each yabava, each whimpering sound, is itself made up of 3. It's split into 3. So 3 yabavos is actually 9 very short sounds, and that's what we know as a teruah. Alright, continue the Mishnah. Toka Borishoina, if one blew the first tekiya of one of the sets of 3, remember there are 3 sets of tekiya, teruah, tekiya. So somebody blew a tekiya for the first time, and then he blew the teruah, and when it came to the second tekiya, the tekiya which comes after the teruah, umoshach bashaniya kishtayim, he prolonged the second blast of the tekiya for the length of what 2 tekiyas would be. So however long one needs to make the tekiya last, he blew it for double that. The question is, can that be considered like 2 tekiya blasts? Like the last one of the first set, and the first tekiya of the next set? Says the Mishnah, no, at the end of the day it was only 1 blast, 1 longer blast, in biyodei ela achas. It's only considered like 1 tekiya, because the Torah requires 9 blasts, or 3 sets of tekiya, teruah, tekiya, and this would not be considered to be 2 of them, only 1. Now, as we saw earlier on in the Masechta, ideally the shofar should be blown during Musaf, at the end of 3 of the middle brachas in Shmona Esrei, the Malchios, the Chronos, and Shofros. The Mishnah discusses somebody, Mishaberach, somebody who made the brachas of the Shmona Esrei of Musaf, but he did not have a shofar available, and only V'acharkach, after he had finished davening Nismana lo shofar, he managed to obtain a shofar. Says the Mishnah, Toikea Umeria, V'seikea Shalosh Pa'omim. He should blow a tekiya, teruah, tekiya 3 times, just as he would have done during Musaf, at different parts of Shemona Esrei. So now he should just blow all 3 sets of tekiya, teruah, tekiya all at one, even though ideally it should be done together with Shemona Esrei. If one has finished that, he can still blow the shofar by itself, and blow all of the blasts together. Now the Masechta ends off with a relatively unrelated law, and that is with regards to a chazan for a regular Shemona Esrei. The halacha is that as well as the chazan repeating the Shemona Esrei, he also says it silently himself, the regular silent Shemona Esrei. Now, according to the Tanakhama, the reason why the chazan repeats the Shemona Esrei is in order that those people who don't know how to daven themselves, for example, in those days where there were very few sidurim available, so people sort of had to daven by heart, so those who couldn't do so would fulfill their obligation by listening to the chazan repeat Shemona Esrei. However, says the Mishnah, Keshem Shashliach Tzibur Chayev, just like the Chazan himself, is obligated to recite Shemona Esrei silently first, Kach Kol Yochid V'Yochid Chayev, so too each individual who knows and is able to say Shemona Esrei himself is obligated to do so himself and cannot rely on the Chazan's Shemona Esrei. However, Rabban Gamliel says, Shliach Tzibur Moitzes Rabban Yudei Chayvasan, the Chazan can fulfill the obligation on behalf of the entire public, even those who are able to say Shemona Esrei themselves. And the reason why the Chazan has to say the silent Shemona Esrei first is not because his repetition is not considered to be a good Shemona Esrei. It's only so that he can see the Shemona Esrei first and practice it to himself and familiarize himself with the words before actually repeating it out loud. But the repetition is perfectly valid, and therefore anybody, according to Rabban Gamliel, can rely on it to fulfill their obligation of Shemona Esrei. Solik Maseches Rosh Hashanah Mazel Tov. The subject matter of Maseches Tanis are fast days which are instituted when a tragedy or a very difficult situation strikes a particular community,
or the entire country.
And for the most part, it discusses one-off fasts. Not fasts which are fixed every single year and become part of the calendar, but fasts which, when the tragedy is there, in order to show that we realize that it's coming from Hashem, and the only way to stop it is by doing teshuvah and becoming better people and davening to Hashem. So we fast and have special prayers in davening, as the Mishnah will describe. And the first perek focuses on fasts which are decreed when it does not rain. If it hasn't rained by a certain point in winter, so it appears that there is a drought. So again, that's a sign that we need to do teshuva, and therefore fasts would be decreed. Now, the Yom Tov of Sukkos is immediately before the winter season, and the Mishnah in the beginning of Maseches Rosh Hashanah taught us that on Sukkos we are judged on rain, how much rain there will be that year. And in fact, the Gemara explains that the Arba Minim, the mitzvah of taking and shaking the four species on Sukkos, one of the reasons for doing so is in order to be a merit to have lots of rain, since the Araminim are dependent on rain in order to grow. So because of this, we begin to mention rain in Shemoneh Esrei on Sukkos, or perhaps right after Sukkos, as we're about to see in the Mishnah, but certainly around this time. Now, there are two mentions of rain, during the winter at least, in Shemoneh Esrei. One is in the second bracha of Atogibur, and that is where we say, Mashivah Ruach Umered HaGeshem. He makes the wind blow and the rain come down, and that is not a request for rain, rather it's praising Hashem for rain. Later on, in the bracha of Baruch Oleinu, there we ask the Saint Talu Matar, give dew and rain, that's a request for rain. This Mishnah focuses on Me'emos HaMazkirin Gvoros Kishomim, when do we begin to mention the power of rain, and that refers to Mashiv HaRuach Omerit HaGeshem. Rebbe Eliezer says, Beyond the Vereshit Shalachag, from Shachris on the first day of Sukkos, whereas Rabbi Yeshua says, Beyond the Vereshit Shalachag, we start from the Musaf of the last day of Sukkos, which is actually referring to Shmini Atzeres, which sometimes is known as the last day of Sukkos, other times it's known as it's a new Yom Tov in itself. But the point is, you wait until after Sukkos, or the end of Sukkos, to begin mentioning the rain. Omar Rabbi Yeshua said to Rabbi Eliezer in order to explain his opinion, since rain is only a sign of a curse on Sukkos, because Hashem commands us to live in Sukkos, and if it rains, then that's a sign that Hashem does not want us to serve him in that way. So certainly it's not good if it rains on Sukkos, so Lama Mazkir, why would we begin mentioning it on Sukkos? Amar Rabbi Eliezer said to him, Afanila Martin Lishol, even I didn't say that we should ask for rain on Sukkos, say the Saint Halumatar, but rather only to mention Mashiv HaRuach Omerit HaGeshem, about how Hashem makes the wind blow and the rain come down, but Einosai, during its season, which will begin right after Sukkos. So of course we wouldn't start asking for rain now, because we don't want it to rain. But since we're being judged for rain, and the Araminim, which are in order to merit rain, are shaken already from the beginning of Sukkos, so we should also start mentioning and praising Hashem for the rain already from then, but not yet to ask for rain. Oh my loy! Rabbi Yeshua said back to Rabbi Eliezer and Cain, if that's the case, you're differentiating between mentioning rain and not asking for it because you don't actually want it to rain right now. Then lo mihei mazkir. You should always mention Mashiv HaRuach in Shemoneh Esrei. Even in the summer, you should praise Hashem for the fact that in the winter, when it should rain, he makes it rain. But clearly that's not the case. And also mentioning Mashiv HaRuach is dependent on the rainy season. So here too, you should wait until the actual rainy season after Sukkos, after we no longer live in the sukkah, from Shmini Atzeres onwards, and only then should we begin mentioning Mashiv HaRuach.